This is The Den Show.
I'm Chris Kay and welcome to The Den Show. This is your audio martial arts magazine with news, events, features, interviews and tons more. The podcast covers everything from kung fu to kickboxing to BJJ and taekwondo. Coming up, Jamie Club on the advantages and disadvantages of cross-training.
The downside of cross-training, which we can see all the time, is you get people who train in lots of different arts, have got no idea how to put it together, or they do something which I call welding, which is where they just fit lots of different drills and patterns and ideas and concepts, and they stick them all together without really looking at the overall game plan.
And advice for analysing karate kata from Ian Abernethy.
Once you kind of understand the way kata are constructed and you understand the way a real fight is, well, it's just a matter of putting those two together.
This is The Den Show with Chris Kay. News.
So let's take a look at some of the news making the headlines at thedenshow.com. Is Damon Sansom Great Britain's secret to success at the London 2012 Games? Well, 6 months ago, the 24-year-old taekwondo expert divided his time between karate and kickboxing. With neither sport part of the Olympics, dreams of glory at the Games never entered his mind. Now, all of that has changed. After being headhunted by Talent 2012, Sansom has made the switch to taekwondo. Competing at 87 kilograms, he's already won medals at Paris and the US Open. Sansom is establishing himself as a forerunner for the Olympics next summer. Elsewhere, Grace and Chloe Bruce have kicked and punched their way through to the next round of Britain's Got Talent. The martial arts sisters impressed the judges, earning 3 yes verdicts from the panel. A comic action fantasy has taken the top prize at Hong Kong's 30th annual film festival. The movie revolves around an old martial arts master who wakes up from a decade-long coma. Gallants, a low-budget film that makes a humorous homage to Hong Kong kung fu films of the 70s, won the award for Best Film. It also won the Best Supporting Actor, Best Supporting Actress and Best Original Film Score. Meanwhile, a Surrey Judo Squad training session attracted 2 very special visitors recently, as Commonwealth champion Sam Lowe and 7-time world medalist Katrina Bryant were guest coaches for the day at Croydon Judo Club. The 2012 hopefuls, who both train full-time at Camberley Judo Club, started their competitive careers representing Surrey before progressing to national and international success. The Surrey County Committee invited Sam Lowe to take a class at Croydon Judo Club to help her raise money towards her Olympic pursuit after the 78-kilogram judoka was unable to meet funding criteria due to a run of injuries. Surrey Judo President Alan Rickard said the two players were delighted to return to their roots to hold a session for the BJA Surrey County squad. And filming on the Paramount Pictures big-budget G.I. Joe movie sequel is about to begin in New Orleans. British action star Ray Park will reprise his role as Snake Eyes. Park tweeted, "Good news all, as you might have guessed, I'm coming back to play Snake Eyes for the sequel of G.I. Joe. Good script, my hardcore workouts have begun, I cannot wait." The Glasgow-born actor was introduced to martial arts by his father. He began Northern-style Kung Fu age 7 before moving on to kickboxing and wushu. G.I. Joe 2 Cobra Strikes is slated for an August 12th, 2012 release. And you can check out more news online at thedenshow.com.
This is The Den Show.
You can now follow The Den Show on Twitter and join The Den Show group on Facebook as well. Just do a little search on both of those social networking sites for The Den Show. And there's various ways to listen as well. You can stream The Den Show at thedenshow.com or download and subscribe via iTunes or podomatic.com.
This is The Den Show with Chris Kay.
So let's welcome onto The Den Show, Jamie Club. Hi, Jamie.
Hi there. How's it going?
Jamie's been studying martial arts since he was a teenager. He holds belts in various disciplines. He's written articles for Combat and Martial Arts Illustrated, released a series of instructional DVDs, and runs Club Chimera Martial Arts. First of all, I want to find out a little bit about your background and about your club as well. So what is Club Chimera Martial Arts and what is it based on?
Right, OK, well, first of all, thanks very much for pronouncing it correctly, because the CH is often mispronounced by most people who read it. But yes, it's Club Chimera, and the Chimera, the symbol for the Chimera, as you might notice, is from Greek mythology. It's a term used to describe often a chaotic mix of different things, a hybridization. And essentially that is at the root of Club Chimera martial arts. It's an approach to self-protection and mixed martial arts that embraces various different styles and disciplines, non-specific ones, I hasten to add. It's an ongoing sort of organic process, and also recognises the chaotic nature of violence, whether it's in sporting competition or whether it's dealing in the self-protection, self-defence field. I started Club Chimera Martial Arts around about 2004-2005, beginning with a children's class, which I still run to this day, and I also teach seminars and workshops geared towards adults and children. My own background in martial arts started when I was about 13 years old. I started in a rather obscure offshoot of Taekwondo called Sekkaido, which was a mixture of kickboxing and Taekwondo. Then moved on to Taekwondo, then American kickboxing, Muay Thai, Wushu, Songshan, Shaolin, and Kung Fu. I've done various different courses on different systems from all over the world, and then got really involved in the combatives and reality-based stuff. Post 2000, really, training with people like Jeff Thompson and Mo Teague. And on top of that, I've been involved a lot with grappling arts, particularly Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and some of the more traditional grappling systems as well.
So you've kind of taken all of that knowledge and put it together in a system that you're now teaching. But I guess, you know, doing that, there are good points and bad points to it. I mean, what are the advantages and disadvantages of cross-training and amalgamating what you've learned into this one system?
Well, yes, it's an interesting perspective that you're coming from. And we often see this in the martial arts world. A way that a lot of people try and define what I do is by saying that what I've got is a system which is a mixture of different styles. But if you notice that the Chimera is not only just a hybridization, it's also a chaotic. It's often used in a negative context. There's a good reason for this. I don't see what I do as a system as such. I move away from the word system. One of the things I teach is a system, which is the Motique hard target system, which is the self-protection thing. That's its own context, its own category. I'm very careful about using nouns in any of what when it comes to actual martial arts to describe a martial art. To me, it's more of a verb. It's more what you do. So I don't see the class I run to fit underneath any specific sort of style, any specific sort of dogma, should we say, on that end of it. Or, but even in loosely fitting the word system, it's more of an approach more than anything else. So when I approach cross training, yes, the downside of cross training, which we can see all the time, is you get people who train in lots of different arts, lots of different systems, have got no idea how to put it together, or they do something which I call welding, which is where they just they fit lots of different drills and patterns and ideas and concepts, and they stick them all together without really looking at the overall game plan, not the overall purpose. And this is pretty much what we focus on. We focus on ways to train people better. I don't try and get caught all up into, like, this is a Thai boxing kick and this is a Western boxing punch and this is a Kung Fu style sweep and this is a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu style guard and all this sort of thing. And that we just look more from a conceptual basis. So as I say, on the idea of it being an approach, this is the way that we look at it. And for a long time, I've said that martial arts aren't tangible entities, but they're often described as that. And this goes across the general public. It's not just martial artists that do it. You often hear, you know, back in the past, it was like he used his karate on him, or he used his kung fu, like it's something you can carry in your pocket. And the point is that one person's karate is totally different to another person's karate. So you know, styles are not tangible entities. They're just shortcuts for way for people to describe a certain way of doing things. But really, there's only so many things that the human body can do. There's only so many ways that we can use the human body. And also only so many ways we can look at things strategically. So we're taking a step back with the cross-training. We're saying, well, look, let's put the individual at the centre of all this. Not the style, not the system, not even the method. Let's look at the individual. What is the individual capable of? What is the best way to make an individual efficient in line with what their requirements are? So, i.e., if someone wants to be a good combat sports person, you say, well, what's going to be the combat sports that's going to best suit your character and attitude? You know, what rules, what, you know, best suit you to work to your strengths? Or, you know, if you're looking for challenges, you know, what's going to be the thing that's going to be the most challenging for you? From a self-defense perspective, it's like reverse engineering. You look at the most likely situations, and then you line that up with what a person is going to be capable of, and then you come up with the result, as opposed to this is the best technique because I believe it's the best technique, or this is the best technique because Sifu or Sensei or crew told me so. This is the best technique for you, because the exercise that we've just done demonstrates that. The exercise that we've just done shows you for yourself that this is going to work best for you. That's the way that we look at it. So it's a bit of a backwards way of doing things, if you like, and that can be taken either way you want.
Well, the approach sounds better, because when I hear about modern schools being created in the last 5 years or whatever, is you end up just becoming a jack of all trades and a master of none. I think that's the danger with it, isn't it?
That's certainly part of it. But again, it's this thing of like, it all depends on what your perspective is. I mean, for me, for self-defense, is it very much, it's an individualistic thing. It's not like, it's not someone's Krav Maga worked for them, or their Sistema worked for them, or their Wing Chun worked for them, or whatever style you want to put it. It's that they worked. It's just that, what worked for them. It's not the style doesn't do it for you. So when you say the jack of all trades, master of all run, or none, it's more like the approach that I think is the problem. I really, really think that is the issue. That people, I use this as an example with my Vagabond Warriors workshops for martial artists that are involved in cross training, and the idea of these workshops are to give people their objective, to immediately what is it your objective? This is going to be your plan. This is going to be, you know, rather than just keep training all over these different styles and systems and wondering what you're going to get from them, or trying to fit things in or argue whether something works or not. Let's start straight away with what's your objective, what you need to achieve. Then let's look at, through various methods of testing, how you're going to achieve that. From that, from that point of view, then you start saying, well, I'm going to get the attributes from various different systems, as opposed to I'm going to weld on this technique. And again, this is something I said at Vagabond Warriors. Classic example is I went to a so-called traditional jiu-jitsu school, and I use the word traditional because the word traditional is often by a lot of modernists like me, a lot of martial arts skeptics, shall we say, the traditional side of things often gets a real battering, and I think it's often unfair. I mean, you've got people like Ian Abernethy out there who for me represent pretty much what traditional training should be all about, and most instructors follow that line of reasoning. People like him or Alan Gibson and Wing Chun and things like that, there wouldn't be as many of these problems or conflicts or confusions that a lot of people, you know, have, and we wouldn't be having a lot of these debates. I mean, you'll still be having debates, it's healthy, but a lot of the debates will be there. But in a word, with this quasi-traditional jiu-jitsu school that I went to, I noticed that the instructor was sticking to his syllabus in terms of doing his wrist locks and throws and takedowns and submissions, and that was great. And then he was getting everyone to box, and it was part of the warm-up. And then he had any punch that anyone threw had to be a boxing punch, had to be a boxing-style punch. And I remember doing this and training with it, and I instinctively stepped forward with a punch on something. I just felt that that's what, fitted it. I didn't see what everyone else was doing. And he was telling me quite explicitly, on the street, people punch like as if they're boxing. They'll punch off the back leg, and they'll do like a cross. And, of course, it's nonsense. What actually had happened is that from seeing the way that he was doing things, his boxing, the punch in the boxing had no relation to the traditional jiu-jitsu that he was doing. All he'd figured out was that the boxers were the better punches, which is, you know, largely speaking, that's true. If you're going to focus on an art that is completely isolated on punching, that specializes in punching and stuff like that, then guess what? You're going to produce some of the best punches, and especially if it's full contact. So he'd seen that, And rather than seeing the attributes from that, he felt that the art was better. So therefore, he'd welded it on without taking into consideration his stance or the way you're going to move. I mean, a lot of people in the MMA world, will tell you that things have to be adapted. You'll go into boxing to get really good with your hands, but you're going to get absolutely murdered if you're just going to stand there in a classic boxing stance or the way that you'd fight another boxer in the MMA ring. You're just going to be open to tie leg kicks to the front leg, or you're going to be open to single leg takedowns and things like that. Likewise, if you do the Thai boxing stance, okay, that's a little bit more square on, you've still got too shallow a stance for the takedowns. So you have to adjust and adapt to it. This, again, I see has been the big problem with a lot of the cross-training. You will go to a seminar that will process each cross-training and have this great big convoluted drill or series of movements that they all want to follow, the person's going to be teaching. They all connect and it all looks beautiful, but A, it's going to be nigh on impossible to remember it under pressure, and B, it just doesn't seem relevant. It seems like if you're trying to choreograph a fight scene, then yeah, maybe great, but it just seems to be a lot like this. Oh yeah, we could fit this in and we can fit that in, but this is not what's going to come when the pressure is applied to the situation. So a lot of it is just I'd say it's welding, or if you want to call it stitching, if you can imagine that as an analogy.
Jamie, I'm going to leave it there. It's been very insightful. It's been great to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed it.
And there'll be more from Jamie Clubb on future podcasts.
This is The Den Show.
Now, in this section of the podcast, I'm going to take a look at the Kyi. What is a Kyi? Now, when you say martial arts to practitioners and non-practitioners alike, the image of Bruce Lee and his wacky noises come to mind, or guys kicking and punching, doing lots of shouting. You know, even people with no experience will perform a chop in midair and shout, "Hiya!" So what are these strange noises and what is their purpose? Well, it's a battle cry that the Japanese call a Kyi. Kyi is frequently defined as a spirit shout, but as is often the case, a literal Japanese translation can be tricky. The word ki is the dynamic force, the energy behind the spirit of everything in existence. Ai is harmony, coming together and associating. According to Togakureru Densho, Kyi is harmonizing with the dynamic force of the universe. Ian Abernethy describes Kyi as a coming together of our mental intent, emotional intensity, technique and physicality to ensure a powerful fight-ending technique. The emotional, mental and physical coming together like that has the physiological effect of eliciting a primal shout. More from Ian Abernethy, by the way, coming up shortly. This is echoed by Al Peasland, who wrote in Martial Arts Illustrated that the Kyi should not only be an explosion of aggression and intention through the voice, but also through the physical kime, the muscle tension, your facial expression, even the glare and emotion in your eyes. In the Book of Five Rings, Miyamoto Musashi describes a cry to overcome an opponent. It comes up from below as if to stab the opponent. Musashi goes on to say that there are three shouts called the initial, middle and final shout. The essential point is to call out in accordance with the situation. At the beginning of a battle, the shouting should be as loud as possible. In the course of battle, the shouting should be low-pitched and booming, while after victory, the shouting should be loud and strong. Masaki Hatsumi encourages a low, open-throated vowel sound to create an effective Kyi shout. It should be a roar, not a shriek or scream of fright. Four different types of Kyi are illustrated in the book Ninjutsu History and Tradition. They are the attacking shout, which causes the adversary to drop his concentration momentarily. The reacting shout, which is heavy and intense and creates a sense of disappointment in the enemy as his tactics are thwarted. The victorious shout is a triumphant noise that celebrates the overcoming of the enemy. And the shadow shout, which is not necessarily vocal, but rather a plunging of the mind, body and feelings into the fight. So the Kyi can be used for priming yourself for combat, amping yourself up, getting yourself ready. You'll see this in the MMA ring, for instance. You know, fighters puffing out their chest, striding around, psyching themselves up by shouting. You'll see it during the fight to startle or demoralise the opponent. And then after a bout, you might see an MMA fighter throw his hands up in the air in victory and ki in celebration. The ki is also used to protect the upper body from a strike, providing an escape route for exhaled air, and it helps to contract the abdominal muscles to shield the internal organs. In summary, a ki is concentrating your force, energy, body, and breath in battle. It is this coming together of intent more than an actual shout. But the result is more often than not an animalistic roar to help you seize victory. The ki should be loud and produced in the stomach rather than the back of the throat. And if you want to check out more about the ki, then definitely take a look at Masaki Hatsumi, Ninjutsu History and Tradition, Miyamoto Musashi, Book of Five Rings, and there's a great article by Al Peaslin called Ki, It's Worth Shouting About.
Events.
Now let's talk to Ian, who's from Kime Sanchin Wado and has a charity course coming up, and you're hoping to raise funds for the Japan Disaster Relief Fund.
Well, it was. I mean, we were going to hold a summer course anyway, and then obviously the Japanese disaster happened. The guy who's the instructor who's taking the seminar said, you know, I want to put my fee towards the Japanese Disaster Fund. I said, well, you know, let's do it for the whole course. So, yeah, so, you know, we thought it would be a good idea. Hopefully we'll be able to raise that 500-600 quid if we get enough people coming.
Yeah, that'd be really good. I mean, do you guys know anybody in Japan personally, or...?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Jamie, whose instructor was actually lost in... I mean, he's actually found in the end, thank goodness. But he was lost out there for a little bit when it first kicked off.
Hmm.
And people were missing. But he's an elderly gentleman now, as well, you know, a lot of our masters and, you know, top rated guys are.
So when's it happening?
It's 9th of July. It's Hawley and Blackwater Leisure Centre, which is in Blackwater, which is their Camberley in Surrey. So what I've done is I've divided adults as well. So we're going to have kids from 10 till 12. Have a quarter of an hour break, 12:15, let anybody out and anybody in, sort of things that were. And times of photographs with Jamie and whatever. And then 12:15 to 2:45, I'd have third queue and below. I'd say, and then from 3 o'clock till 5:30 would be the second queue and above.
Is it just a case of turn up on the day and pay your money, or do you have to kind of give you a call beforehand? Or
No, turn up and pay money would be great.
Brilliant. Well, I hope it all goes well. And
yeah, thanks very much.
Thank you, Ian. Nice one. Good to talk to you.
Feature.
Right, let's welcome onto the Den Show Ian Abernethy. Ian holds a 6 Dan with the British Combat Association. He regularly writes for the UK's leading martial arts magazines and is well known for his pragmatic approach to karate and his work with kata application. Hello, Ian.
Hello.
If you're starting off on this process of looking at the movements within the kata, I mean, what would your advice be? How do you start off that process?
Well, what took me a long time to get going with that is the way of thinking about it. Once you kind of understand the way kata are constructed and you understand the way a real fight is, and that's often a problem because people's often their only frame of reference is what they know from competitive sparring or working with other karateka in the dojo. But once you know those two, really, so you know the way kata are constructed and you know what a real fight's like, well, it's just a matter of putting those two together. So what took me a long time to get was how these kata work the way they work. So something I could point people to, if they want to go to my website, there's a free ebook on there they can download called An Introduction to Applied Karate. And that's got a list of some of the kind of key points that I think people need to bear in mind when looking at kata to help put the nature of kata and the realism together. Then hopefully the kata will start to speak to them and it's something they can decode for themselves.
Now, if you're in a class and your instructor isn't teaching the bunkai, I mean, how do you approach the sensei to say, look, I'm interested in this, can we incorporate it into the training without kind of offending him or whatever?
Well, I get asked that quite a lot. I think there's a couple of things. The first one is that there's some damn an hostility, I think, towards bunkai by people who don't quite understand what it is. So it's not an alternative to training. It's not something that renders the rest of karate obsolete. It's something that fulfills the rest of karate. So I always say it's like finding out that your house has another room. You know, I mean, it doesn't detract from the value of the house. It adds to the house, you know. So I think one thing is making sure that, you know, whoever you're talking to about it understands that this is something that makes what they already do better and more functional. It's not an alternative to it, and it's not taking anything away from it either. You know, it makes it work practically. And for well, I would also, you know, the best way to do it with people is just to let them see it as well. I think it's one of these things that you can talk about it in theory and things, but I think once people actually see it done, I feel that its value is so self-evident, it's hard to reject it. So just showing people, saying, well, this is the kind of thing that I'm thinking of, what do you think? Generally, if it's presented in the right way, it's something that people are warm to, I find. It shouldn't be a cause of any friction or hostility if it's presented right, you know, and the person on the receiving end is open-minded enough to look at it objectively.
Because I don't think there is enough done with the CATA application, because, you know, for most of the, you know, certainly my training, it's been like, well, this doesn't really have any relevance to the rest of it. We're just learning a sequence of moves that it has no reference, doesn't relate to anything else that we're doing. And once you kind of find out what they actually mean and start looking into it, it kind of thinks, well, this is actually the most important bit. I should be doing more of this.
Well, that's certainly been my take on it. Yeah, I mean, I think that it puts karate, right back at the centre of karate. It fulfills its purpose. Because I think what tends to happen is, I sometimes call it 3K karate, where you've got kata, kion and kumite, and all three are completely separate disciplines. They're not related to one another. But if you put kata at the centre and fulfill, study it, let it fulfill its purpose, take the bunkai out, then that starts to affect your two-person drills. And naturally, that starts to affect your sparring as well. And it becomes the art that the old masters did, and not the replica of it that it's sometimes became in certain quarters, you know.
Well, Ian, thank you very much for being on the Den Show today. Appreciate that. It's been good to talk to you.
My pleasure. Anytime.
This is The Den Show.
So that just about wraps up this edition of The Den Show. And don't forget, you can leave your feedback on the podcast. Let me know your thoughts and feelings. What did you like? What would you like to hear more of? You can contact me via thedenshow.com, or you can tweet or leave me a message via Facebook. But for now, thank you for listening.
This is The Den Show with Chris Kaye.